Well, this is Michael Brown, and I am coming your way live from Israel College of the Bible in Israel today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we are live in Israel right now. I'm actually in the radio studios of Israel College of the Bible in Netanya. They've had amazing growth in recent years. They've got an amazing vision for evangelism and training leaders. I've got some faculty here from Israel College of the Bible that's going to join me. And our phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Especially if you've got deep, detailed biblical questions or Israel questions, or if you just want to keep me awake. You know, I travel all the time, got in yesterday, made sure I stayed up until the evening. You can't take an afternoon nap or you'll be up all night. But I was kind of zonked today. Our tour group arrived today. We've got a great group. We've got, about eight or nine gals from Singapore, just graduating from law school, came here together as a graduation present. We've got another couple on their 30th anniversary here and our 55 people in the tour group. So it's great to see them. We hit the road early tomorrow morning and start going through different parts of Israel and be coming your way live from different locations in Israel over the week. But I've been fighting a little jet lag, getting more revived as the day goes on, which means it's going to be interesting come bedtime in a few hours, because right now it is right past 9 p.m. in Israel. So 866-34-TRUTH, if you just want to be part of history and be some of the first callers while we're in Israel, even to just say shalom and hello so that we can say shalom to you from Israel, give us a call. And I'm joined right now, I've got a couple of folks that are going to join me, with one of the faculty members here at Israel College of the Bible, David Rothstein. David, before we talk about you and studies and interests and things like that, Israel College of the Bible, how long has the school existed now?
Israel College of the Bible has been around for about 22 years, and it began in Jerusalem, and God has really done amazing things. We bought our own campus about 4 years ago, and in the last 4 years, our faculty has tripled, our student body has doubled.
And now you have an international program where folks can come for a year, and we'll talk about that a little later. But otherwise, all your classes are taught in Hebrew, and you have Jews and Arabs.
Correct.
And it's what, about 60% Jews, 30% Arabs, and 10% international?
Correct. In fact, I think we are the only place in the Middle East where Jews and Arabs get together on a regular basis. We do ministry together. We pray together. We grow together. We train. We equip one another together for the work of the gospel.
And is there a need right now for raising up leaders? We talk about the harvest, winning the lost in Israel, but is there a need to raise up leaders? Are there adequate teachers, evangelists, shepherds in Israel right now?
Well, listen, you know the history well. Back in the early 70s, I believe there was a handful of Messianic congregations and very few Arabic-speaking evangelical congregations. And as we speak, I believe there are close to 200 congregations scattered across Israel.
Mm.
Very few of the leaders have been theologically trained, although they're wonderful men and women of God. And we are here to really equip the next generation. There was a time a few years ago when all the believers knew one another. Now it's very common that we meet believers that for the very first time.
Yeah, and as the harvest is being reaped, and maybe 25,000 believers in Israel, many of them native-born, others that have come in from other countries, as God is reaching people, there's a need. We'll talk about the Orthodox, the very religious. Is God reaching them, and what kind of needs there are? And when we come back, as someone that studies the scriptures in Hebrew, let's dig in. Let's get some insights together. And if you want to post a question on our Facebook page on Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook, go ahead and post it. We'll be taking some of your questions live from Israel right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hear, O Israel, all of mankind can be born in him, singing all of mankind can be born in him.
That's not from Israel. It's not Messianic Jewish. It's the Talbot brothers, but that's great stuff. Hear, O Israel, Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Coming your way live from Israel College of the Bible, actually from their radio studio. They're doing cutting-edge evangelism online, raising up, training leaders in a phenomenal way. And as you heard a moment ago from David Rothstein, one of the faculty members here, bringing Jews and Arabs together, praying together, worshiping together, studying together, being trained together as brother and sister, and going out to shepherd the flock and win the lost in Israel and beyond. If you've got any kind of question that you want to ask, life on the ground here in Israel, Jewish and Arab reconciliation, or just a Hebrew-related question, we've got enough folks here. We'll be talking with some of the faculty that will really be able to help you out. 866-34-TRUTH. Also, to find out about Israel College of the Bible, maybe you're looking to come to Israel for an intensive year of study. If you've got undergraduate degree already, there's an intensive one-year master's program taught in English here in Israel. Just an absolutely unique situation and setting to be in. Go to One for Israel. Spell it all out, oneforisrael.org. David, obviously God's Word speaks in such a way that we can read it in English or whatever our native language is. And there are many good translations, especially in English, and it is God's Word. It's not like the Quran, and if you don't study the Quran in Arabic, it's not the Quran. We can read the Bible in translation, it's still the Bible. But if you can read the original languages, they come alive. If someone's just asking you, you know, what do you learn from Hebrew? What are some of the insights? Give me some of your favorite, David.
Well, this is a great question. For instance, if I would ask somebody who knew the book of Genesis very well or the Torah very well, how many people were saved on the Ark? Or how many people were saved on an ark? People would typically say eight. But what's really interesting is that Moses was placed, although the English translation says basket, he was actually saved on an ark. It's the same Hebrew word. Now, what's the significance of this is just as Noah was saved from a watery death to fulfill God's creation purposes, he was a key figure in God's purposes for the world. Likewise, Moses, another Noah figure, was saved from a watery death in order to be key in God's creation and redemptive purposes. You wouldn't necessarily see that in an English translation.
Interesting. Give me another example.
Another example. Well, here's another interesting example, and something that the English reader may not necessarily pick up. So, for instance, we see that Abram, when he comes to the land, God promises him the land, and then suddenly there's a famine. And Abraham goes down to Egypt, and we know what happens. Sarah?
Now, why does it say go down? Is it just because it's going south, or does it have to do with some idea that the land of Israel is physically or spiritually higher?
The land of Israel is spiritually higher. For, you know, that's what the scriptures teach. You go up to Jerusalem. No matter where you are in Israel, whether you're in the most northern part of Israel, you go up to Jerusalem. So in any case, he went down to Egypt, and his wife Sarah got taken, or Sarai got taken captive into Pharaoh's house. Well, how does God deliver her? Through plagues on Pharaoh's house, and then Abraham gets wealth and riches, and he comes up. God rescues Sarah through the plagues, and then they come up out of Egypt and back to the promised land. Well, what's really interesting is the language there is virtually identical. In fact, whole phrases are repeated of Israel's exodus.
So from Genesis 12, where that happens, there are whole phrases. So this is kind of like a foretaste of what's going to happen when Israel goes down. And then the people are taken and then delivered by the plagues, and they get wealth, and they come back out of Egypt.
Precisely that. In other words, the life of Abraham is a prophetic foreshadowing of what God would do with the whole nation.
When you talk about prophetic foreshadowing, what about the feasts and the holy days? Let's say some of the language having to do with the Passover. Again, I'm thinking about leaving Egypt. How does it tie in, say, with Isaiah 52 or Isaiah 53?
Well, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked, Dr. Brown. What's really interesting is if you look at Isaiah just prior to the introduction to the suffering servant, we see that Isaiah is using language and he's using phrases taken from Exodus 12, 13, and 14. In other words, he presents the suffering servant in light of the Exodus story. And what's remarkable, Exodus 12 is all about the Passover lamb.
And so Exodus 12 this month will be the beginning of months to you, and this is where God says you sacrifice the lamb and put the blood on the threshold, and when I see the blood, the destroying angel will pass over you. You're saying that there's language from Exodus 12, 13, 14, so then you have leading right up to passing through Yom Suf, the Red Sea. So that's all right in there, and that language you're saying is borrowed by the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 52 going into 53?
In fact, what's really amazing is from chapters 40 till 55 in Isaiah, he frequently goes back to the story of the Exodus, and he's using the language of the Exodus, and he's talking about a new Exodus. And when you have a new Exodus, the servant of the Lord functions as the new Moses. But what's remarkable is when you come to chapter 53, Isaiah having just quoted Exodus 12, what he's saying is that Yeshua, Jesus, is the new Passover lamb for this new Exodus.
Mm. Do you think there's significance in Genesis 22? And friends, coming your way live from Israel, the Israel College of the Bible, if you want to get their website with the outreach and all the work that they're doing, One for Israel, that's all written out, oneforisrael.org. You can find out a lot more. I'm speaking with David Rothstein, one of the faculty members there. David, do you feel that in Genesis 22, the binding of Isaac, when Isaac says, okay, you've got everything ready for the sacrifice, where's the sacrifice? And he says, God will provide a lamb. And then there's actually a ram that's caught in the thing. Do you think there's somewhat of a foreshadowing there about the significance of the lamb in a redemptive history?
Well, there's no question that Abraham said that God would provide a lamb. God did provide a ram.
A ram. And they're not even close in Hebrew, the two words. It's not like ram, lamb. And
correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. And in fact, I would argue that Isaiah 53, in fact, presents that very lamb.
Mm. Now, when you're dealing with Israelis and the ministry here is involved with outreach as well as training, the majority of Israelis are secular in terms of they're not Orthodox Jews, they're not observing the Sabbath in a fully religious way or things like that. You've got the same sin issues everywhere, but you've got the worldliness, you've got the immorality, you've got the carnality. Is there a spiritual hunger among the Israeli people in general, outside of the very religious? Do they have a different orientation, say, than people in America would in terms of spiritual things?
It's a great question. I would say that Israelis are very hungry. In fact, there's a huge movement of Israelis that are getting involved with Kabbalah or Kabbalah. A lot of Israelis travel, believe it or not, to India. You hear about young Israelis that go and they study with gurus. There is a lot of spirituality in Israel. And I would argue that there's a modern-day revival. When you look at the history of the Messianic Jewish movement in Israel, in the last few years, we've experienced remarkable supernatural growth. And I would most of the Israelis that come to faith come from quite secular backgrounds, although there are those that come from religious and even ultra-Orthodox backgrounds.
All right. If you were reaching out for the very first time to an Israeli non-believer, is there a starting point? Someone just posted a question on Facebook, and I'll paraphrase it to make it more suitable here. If you were, obviously, we want to be sensitive. We want to see where someone's coming from. Maybe the Holy Spirit will lead us in certain ways, or there'll be certain cues from what the person's saying. But if you were just trying to break the ice with an Israeli, get a conversation started, something that would be helpful talking to a non-believer, where might you start?
Well, if I were living in America, I would start in the mall and look for those that were selling Ahava products.
All right, Israelis. Find some Israelis there. But since there are Israelis all around here, where do you start? Where's a common thing that they relate to? Or
listen, I would argue it all starts with love. I really think that just warm, loving connection. Hey, I love Israel. I support Israel. I believe that Israelis, as anybody, they respond to love. What's really interesting, too, is that Israelis are not afraid to talk about Jesus. We have Jesus in our face here. There are hundreds of thousands or millions of tourists that come specifically to the holy sites to find out about Jesus. It's an unavoidable issue even for Israelis.
Right, so if you have the total population of Israel, Jews and Arabs, about 8 million, you have over 3 million tourists coming here. Hey, we come back, I'm going to give away a free copy of the Tree of Life version, Messianic translation of the Bible. Stay right there.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am coming away live from Israel. I'm in Netanya, and we've got a gorgeous view of the coast from our hotel room, and we'll start our tour in earnest tomorrow. Wish more of you could be here with us, but we're just having a great time meeting the tour group, and coming your way live from the Israel College of the Bible, just doing great work. They've had tremendous growth in recent years. And I'm about to chat with Moti, who is an Israeli believer, native-born Israeli, but came to faith through the witness of Gentiles in the States. So I want to encourage you, even if you don't have any Jewish blood, you can reach Jewish people with the good news. All right, here's what I want to do. The Tree of Life, Messianic Version, $30 value for the hardcover. Anyone who becomes a torchbearer this week, we're sending you this as a free gift. But caller number 7, 866-34-TRUTH, caller number 7, I want to send you absolutely free your copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. $30 hardcover. We're the first ministries anywhere in the world to be getting them. Ours is one of them. So 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Seventh caller, you get it free. Moti, how old are you now?
29.
29. Born and raised in Israel.
Yes.
All right. What were you doing in the States?
Well, I sold the Dead Sea products for a while.
Ah, all right. So you're in the malls selling Dead Sea products.
Yes, in California.
All right. Were you spiritually seeking in any way then?
Not for the first year, but for the next 2 years, yes.
Why were you seeking?
Answers, or just to find something that will fulfill my heart.
So we do have a winner. Thank you, friends. We do have a winner. Maybe in the next half hour I'll give away another copy, but we do have a winner. Thank you. So do you find the Israelis travel over to America? You know, they seem to be very friendly. You see them at the mall selling these products, but most of them are secular. You'll see them working, you know, on Shabbat, on Sabbath, on Saturday. Is there a spiritual hunger in many of them? Is that common, seeking for more?
I think that most of the Israelis, when they travel, they not travel only for money. They travel for even for something spiritual, something bigger than just to find money. And yes, I used to be with a lot of Israelis around me, and we used to, you know, celebrate the Shabbat, celebrate the holidays. We had some spiritual seeking. We were looking for some answers, but we never had anybody to talk with.
Did anyone come and share the gospel with you when you were working at the mall? Did people, when they found out you're Israeli, did they want to share Yeshua with you?
All the time. Yes.
All right. When you first heard about Jesus, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I didn't know that his name is Yeshua in Hebrew, because in Israel we call him Yeshu, which is a different name.
Yes.
But the first time I heard his name is Yeshua, which means Jesus in English, for me it was like a big enlightenment, you know, like never heard the name before, never knew it was Jewish, didn't mm-hmm. had any particular reason to understand it was Jewish, Israeli. So,
And when you were on your search, where did you look?
Oh, wow. Well, I was working as a kosher supervisor in New York.
Really?
And in a pizza shop. And I found myself with a group of from Jews for Jesus, actually, and Chosen People, where they kind of gave me a copy of the New Testament. They made me read a few, not made me, but they kind of wanted me to read a few verses from Isaiah 53, which I never read before. I thought I knew the Bible by heart, but I guess I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So I just read the Bible and came out with conclusions. And saw a lot of your videos, by the way.
I appreciate that. Now, the people that shared the gospel with you, the main ones that spoke to you, were they Jewish believers themselves?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So where did Gentile believers come in your own testimony?
Well, one day I was working at the pizza shop, and this guy walked into the restaurant, and he saw that we were looking at the Israeli channel, and he was just talking to me in very broken Hebrew. So I asked him, why do you speak Hebrew? And he said, well, I love Israel. I want to live there. I want to be there one day. I want my family to be there. And I told him, you know, we as Israelis, we finish the army, and the first thing we do is just run away from Israel. And you want to come to Israel. And since then, we just became really good friends. He was not Jewish. Just became really good friends from this time. And then he started sharing with me about Passover, about our traditions, which didn't have any clue, and he didn't have any answers for him.
And when you came to faith and you confessed Yeshua as Lord, what did your family say when they heard this?
Well, my mom was the first to know. And whenever I talked to her on the phone, it seems like someone died in the family. She didn't want anybody to know that I believe in Jesus. My dad heard about it later on, and he wanted to say Kaddish upon me. I don't know how to say it in English, what Kaddish means.
Yeah, this is something that's said in memory of the dead. So it's not a prayer for the dead, but it's something that you recite when someone dies, and it's a sacred ritual that's done for a period of almost a year afterwards that you repeat this. So in the synagogue, on the Shabbat service, the Sabbath service, or morning prayer, if you've lost a relative within the year, you stand and you recite this and pray this. So he wanted to pray the prayer that you pray to honor God for a dead person.
Yes. Yes, he actually, he told me that he has no son anymore, that that's it, that I have no family anymore. But thank God, a year after, I got back to Israel, and we got in a really good relationship with my family.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And have any more of them come to faith?
Not yet.
Not yet, but you have a good relationship.
Yes.
So that's a miracle to start. I've got a couple more questions for you. We're out of time now. Friends, if you want to keep listening, remember, our friends always remind you on WMCA and WAVA-FM that you can keep listening by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the banner to listen live. There's a whole lot more we want to talk about in the next hour and a half, but we'll be coming your way live from Israel most of the nights while we're here, from different locations, from Galilee, from Jerusalem. And I want to encourage you to partner with us. We constantly hear from Jewish believers around the world that the materials that we produced have really been able to bless them and help them. There's so much more that we want to do to help reach our people with the good news, but it's a partnership. This has never been a one-man show. It's always a partnership. It's always teamwork. So if you're able to put aside $1 a day or more to become a torchbearer, it's been great to meet some of our torchbearers, our monthly supporters on this trip. Not only do we send you a new audio message every month, not only do you get access to all of our online classes and a 15% discount on our online bookstore, but I want to do something special and send you, as a thank you gift when you sign up, a copy of the Tree of Life version of the Scriptures, a fresh new Messianic Jewish translation of the entire Bible, a unique team project that's never been done like this before with Messianic Jewish sensitivities, but for the whole body. It's a $30 value plus postage, and it's my thank you gift as you become a torchbearer. Hey, send us a good message while we're here in Israel. Hold my hands up together. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Or just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, AskDr Brown, and just click there to donate and stand with us. Together, friends, we are making a difference.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, yeah. That music normally means it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What day is it? Is it?
Here, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. I've kind of lost track traveling over, but we are coming your way live from Israel. So the normal Thoroughly Jewish Thursday music, well, it's actually live from Israel music. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. The number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. With any questions you may want to ask us live from Israel, we gave away a copy of the Tree of Life version, the complete translation of the Bible by a team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars. Maybe I'll give away another in this half hour, especially from Israel. I'm speaking with Moti. He is a Jewish believer, native-born Israeli believer in Yeshua, came to faith in the States, and God used Jewish and Gentile believers to lead him to faith. When he came to faith, his family treated it as if he had died, but God's restored those relationships. We're just praying for the rest of his family to come to faith. But Moti, you're involved with radio ministry here. In fact, I'm sitting in your studio.
Correct.
Using our equipment and your equipment together. What do you do on radio in Israel? Who's your audience? What languages do you use?
Well, as for now, we kind of building our audience. Most of them are believers, Jewish believers from all over the country.
Now, you can broadcast freely. There's no restriction.
Yeah. That's an online radio.
Okay.
It's not an FM. Not
right.
yet. We hope to do that sometime soon. In the future. Right now, so we broadcast all over Israel. We have an app that people can actually download and listen to the radio. From 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Israel time, we have different podcasts in Hebrew that broadcast to our audience, to the Israelis. And then from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. Israel time again, we broadcast most of our shows in English.
All right, so if folks want to listen to the broadcast online, because it's online, they can do it anywhere in the world. How do they do that?
Well, they can go online at agape.fm.
So A-G-A-P-E, agape.fm.
Yes.
All right.
Or they can download an app, which is TuneIn. That's the name of the app, TuneIn Radio. And then they need to search for Agape FM over there.
All right.
Or through One for Israel.
All right. So, again, the simple website, One for Israel. That's all spelled out O-N-E-F-O-R, oneforisrael.org. Do you have people, religious Jews, secretly contacting you who have seen things on internet or heard things on internet, and they contact you? They can't come out publicly and say that they're seeking, but you hear from them secretly?
I have to be honest. If 2 years ago, I used to meet a guy up in Jerusalem, that he converted to Judaism, got married to someone Jewish in a synagogue, became really ultra-Orthodox, and start seeking about Jesus just like that.
Wow.
And I got the opportunity to sit with him and pray with him to receive the Lord in his life. And he just left a few months. He got back to the States. I have no idea what's going on with him right now, but I hope for him that he's doing well. His name is Jacob.
All right. Hey, 45 seconds. If someone in the States meets an Israeli, what's the best thing to do if they want to share their faith?
Well, first of all, chutzpah is always a good thing.
All right, you need a little boldness. Okay.
Exactly. The second thing is, you know, Jews all over the world, I think they're afraid of the word Christ or Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So using Messiah, which I never knew that Jesus claimed to be the Messiah.
Isn't that amazing?
The God of the Christian. I didn't even know he's our God. Another thing is maybe some of the Jewish holidays that make that written also in the New Testament. Passover, Sukkot, Tabernacle, many ways of bringing the gospel into the Israelis' life.
Got it. And if you want more info, friends, our website, realmessiah.org, but also oneforisrael.org, you'll find a ton of useful things you can watch and listen to, and also find out about the Israel College of the Bible. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am coming your way live from Israel, Israel College of the Bible in Netanya. They've got great facilities here. God's really blessed the ministry. It's grown tremendously just in the last 3 or 4 years. I've been speaking with a couple of different folks involved with the ministry here, both radio and faculty. Another faculty member is going to join us in a little while. But David Rothstein has been with us and teaches various courses here and is a real student of the Hebrew Scriptures and, of course, a Jewish believer in Jesus, Yeshua. I was struck by some graphics I was just shown before the show about how much Israelis are online. Do you know any of those stats, or in general, paint a picture off the top of your head?
Well, what I do know is that per capita, that Israelis are more online than anywhere else in the world, far more than the United States. In fact, you can get online everywhere, including the buses here.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, you can get online. Israelis are always on the Internet.
Yeah, someone said that pretty soon all of Tel Aviv will be wireless. Anywhere you go, yeah, but we got on the tour bus, and they said, yeah, here's how to get online on the tour bus. And what was it, 122 PCs for every 100 people in Israel?
I don't remember the statistics.
Remarkable. So obviously, this is an incredible time to do outreach on the Internet to speak to Israelis. When you dive into the Scriptures, traditional Jews are studying through the Bible on a weekly basis, studying through the 5 books of Moses and praying some of the Psalms and other portions of Scripture. So they're always in parts of Scripture. In a lot of our seminaries, and we do a lot of studies about Scripture, but don't necessarily immerse people as deeply enough as they need to be in Scripture. Can you contrast, as a faculty member here, the difference between your approach, what may be a typical approach in a Christian seminary in America, or compare that to the way an Orthodox Jew would learn? Is there anything different in terms of the experience of learning the Scripture here?
Well, I think one thing that we as Jewish believers, we typically come to faith struggling over the meaning of the Old Testament and then moving to the New Testament, or at least it's studying them side by side. And we are well aware that in order to understand the New Testament, you need to spend a lifetime studying and meditating on the Bible of Yeshua, which is the Law, the Prophets, and the Writings. It's the Old Testament.
All right. So let's weave some things together. Give me a theme that the Old Testament writers, the writers of the Hebrew Scriptures, perhaps they repeat. Like you mentioned, some of the themes of Genesis 12 and what happens to Abraham and Sarah in Egypt is a foreshadowing of what happens later with Israel, or the Passover lamb foreshadowing. Can you give me a theme? Let's weave it together. Something in the Hebrew Scriptures that's quoted by other authors of the Hebrew Scriptures and then even picked up in the New Testament, something like that.
That's a great question. In fact, one of the things that we teach here is that in order to really appreciate what the New Testament's quotations of the Old Testament, you have to start to develop an awareness of the Old Testament's quotations of the Old Testament. The Old Testament prophets were studying the Torah. They were studying other prophets. One example, for instance, in Zechariah chapter 9, verses 9 through 11, which is this prophecy about the Messiah coming on a donkey. Mm-hmm. Well, what's really interesting is the phraseology that he uses. The phrases is a pair of words for donkeys. That phrase is only elsewhere found in Genesis chapter 49, verse 11, which suggests that Zechariah understood the promise of this coming Messiah from the tribe of Judah, prophesied by Jacob, and that he was developing this prophecy that he found in the book of Moses, in the book of Genesis.
All right, so this is the Shiloh passage that the leadership will come from Judah. So you're saying that some of the imagery there that's used is now taken up in the book of Zechariah. So Zechariah is now expanding on something that's written in the five books of Moses.
Correct. And in fact, there are those evangelical scholars that would deny that Genesis 49, for instance, 8 through 12, is messianic. In other words, they would see it as being fulfilled in David. But by virtue of the fact that you have a prophet, a post-exilic prophet, Zechariah, talking about this prophecy, it strongly suggests, it shows that it really is a messianic prophecy.
So you're saying that the writers of the Hebrew Scriptures were studying the Hebrew Scriptures, the things that came before them. For example, the book of Job that I'm working on a commentary now, there are many citations or indirect quotations. For example, Psalm 8, we all know, what is man that you're mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him, and so on. And it's awe. Wow. God, you're so great and lofty and amazing, and yet you care about just a mortal. Well, in Job 7, he just changes one word and then uses the word he changes in the next part of the verse. And he says, what is man that you keep visiting him? Like, why don't you just leave us alone? Let me die. Let us die. What do you even care about us? But it's clear what he's doing, that the author of Job is taking words of Scripture and now applying them here in an ironic way. But you're saying that happens all through the Hebrew Bible.
In fact, 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 10 through 12, Peter says that concerning this salvation, the prophets diligently searched, seeking the time and the manner and the person of the coming of the Messiah. Well, the question that begs to be asked, what were they searching? They were searching the Scriptures. Prophets were searching the prophets. And there's evidence all throughout the law, the prophets, and the writings. Quotations. For instance, Psalm 72, this promise of this incredible, exalted Messiah King. Well, in verse 17 in the Hebrew, I'm not sure if it's the same in the English, but in Psalm 72, verse 17, you have a whole quote of the Abrahamic covenant that the nations would be blessed in this king. Mm-hmm. And so here we have, long before Paul takes this promise to Abraham and quotes it as a messianic prophecy to the seed, we have it already in Psalm 72:17, where you have a writer that's looking at the promise to Abraham, and he understands it ultimately as being fulfilled in the coming Messiah.
Right. So, and it's the same in English. I'm just looking at the Hebrew and English. So this is the psalmist, and this is written as a prayer for Solomon the king. It's saying, so let the promise that you gave to Abraham be fulfilled in him, which means then that the writers of the Old Testament had some concept of the coming of the Messiah.
In fact, he was the talk of the town. Again, Isaiah chapter 63 is a quotation when he talks about who is this that's coming from Edom. And if you look at the blood-stained clothes and the garments, the language also comes from Genesis 49, verse 11. And throughout the Scriptures, Psalm 72 again, there's allusions to Genesis chapter 3, verse 14, the curse and on the serpent, 13, 14, and 15. So we have prophets quoting prophets. And in fact, the best example is Daniel. Daniel was studying Jeremiah.
Right. So in Daniel, the ninth chapter, he's studying Jeremiah and realizes the 70 years is up. And here's what's interesting. Daniel went into exile earlier. If he was looking at when the nation went into exile at 586, it wasn't time yet. But he said, hey, I've been in exile this long. I'm one of the first exiles. So he counted 70 years from then.
And what's really incredible, too, is that he's studying this passage in Jeremiah about 70 years, trying to understand, I believe, the coming of the Messiah and the new covenant. And so God then says, Daniel, you know, through the angel Gabriel, not 70 years, but 70 weeks of years. Mm-hmm. And so here we have a prime example of a prophet studying the prophets in order to understand the coming and the timing of the coming of the Messiah.
Why do you think it is that so many critical scholars, so they're studying Scripture, but they're not Bible believers in terms of saying this is God's authoritative word and things like that. Why do you think that so many of them say that the concept of a Messiah comes very, very late? It comes after the closing of the Old Testament and was a fairly new concept before the time of Jesus?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I suspect that, you know, when they come to the Scriptures, they come with certain assumptions, presuppositions. And one of the presuppositions, obviously, is that there is no prophecy. There's only prophecy after the fact. That would be one presupposition. So that would probably be...
Right, so in other words, because they're not supernaturalists, because they don't believe that God literally inspired people to predict the future. The prophets spoke for their generation, but they also spoke beyond. So therefore, there's not this view of this coming king who's going to bring deliverance and peace and so on. And because they're not supernaturalists, they're not going to see a coming Messiah. But you're saying, though, if they study the texts of the Hebrew Scriptures themselves, then it's unavoidable that they come to the conclusion that the authors of the Hebrew Scriptures were quoting earlier passages to prove that they did believe in the coming of the Messiah.
Absolutely. And in fact, a lot of the research I've done, I've found, for instance, in the Jewish sages, they picked up on these quotes and they noticed these links, seeing that one prophet quotes another prophet about the Messiah. So this is not something new. This is something that they've noticed and known.
Fascinating. All right, friends, we're coming away live from Israel. We'll come back. I'm going to give another copy away of the Tree of Life version of the Bible.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, that music would normally signify Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. What it signifies is that we are coming your way live from Israel. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I originally thought I was going to be broadcasting from the hotel where we're staying, and then found that we had an invitation to come over about 10, 15 minutes away to Israel College of the Bible and use their own radio studio. But the great delight is to talk to some of their staff and faculty here, dig into the Hebrew Scriptures, hear some firsthand Israeli testimonies as well. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All right, this is going to be really quick, but caller number three, I want to give you an absolutely free copy of the hardcover version of the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first ever team effort Messianic translation of the entire Bible. Again, 866-34-TRUTH, caller number three. It is yours. I've got a bunch more things I want to talk to you about regarding Israel. But first, I want to interact with another faculty member here at the Israel College of the Bible for info about the school or their international studies program to come over here and study for a year towards a bachelor's or master's degree. To find out about their internet outreach or to watch lots of and we do have a winner, so thank you, folks. We have a winner. Lots of fascinating video teachings as well. It is One for Israel. That's all spelled out, O-N-E-F-O-R, onefor-israel.org. Again, thanks for the calls. We do have a winner. My guest joining me now, David Mishkin. I became acquainted with David when he did a compilation of the writings of Alfred Edersheim, and we'll tell you who he was in a moment. And there were quotes in there from books I wasn't even aware that he had written, and David teaches in the international school and has taken some time with us. It's nighttime here in Israel, but David, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thanks, Dr. Brown. I listen to the Line of Fire whenever I can, so I'm really glad to be here now.
Wonderful. All right. So David, the Alfred Edersheim, when I first came to faith, after a little while, I heard about this amazing book, The Life and Times of Jesus, the Messiah, two volumes, 1,500 pages, and heard that he was a Jewish believer. Tell us about him, and we need you to get real close to the mic, but tell us about him.
Okay, well, he's part of a bigger story. In the 19th century, there was a group of Jewish people from a number of cities in Europe who were coming to faith in Yeshua in big numbers. They were called Hebrew Christians. So this was the first time in probably over 1,500 years that there was a real movement among Jews. And he, like some of the others, were scholars. He was originally from Vienna. And what happened was he was studying medicine, actually, and he already knew a number of languages, German, Latin, French, Hebrew, Greek. He didn't know English. So he was taking English lessons with somebody. And when his teacher had to leave, the teacher found somebody else who happened to be a missionary with the Church of Scotland to teach English to Alfred Edersheim.
Really? Now he was quite an astute student of the word. How versed was he in rabbinic literature at that point in his life?
He knew a lot. He was trained in kind of a traditional way, the way Jewish people in Europe at the time would have been trained in the gymnasium and so forth. So he knew the Greek background, the Latin background. He was very well versed.
Right, and his English style of writing was beautiful as well. So you compiled his sayings. What makes them stand out? What's especially rich about the sayings of Alfred Edersheim?
I first discovered him, it was over 25 years ago. I was kind of a new believer, but I was taking a Life of Christ course. And we were reading through the life and times of Jesus the Messiah. And I was a new believer. You know, I never heard of the Septuagint before, or Philo. I remember all the introductory things. And not only the vast amount of information, but he had a poetic way of speaking and also a pastor's heart. So he would say things that were it would really, really stick to you. It wasn't just academic. So there was something I always liked about the way he phrased things. I don't have any quotes here in front of me, but it was academic and passionate and poetic at the same time.
So who were some of the other guys that came to faith at that same time within that same generation from Europe and Eastern Europe?
Well, there's a guy called Adolf Safir who was actually in his group before Edersheim eventually went to London, which had a very big Hebrew Christian movement. David Baron, he came a little bit later. There were even some well-known people who were Hebrew Christians, including a prime minister at one point, Benjamin Disraeli, as well as the great composer Felix Mendelssohn. So it was kind of a far-reaching movement.
It really was. And these missionaries that went to reach Jewish people in Poland and Hungary, they had a great love for Israel. They had a great love for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And here God raised up people. I was reading these guys. I remember David Baron's commentary on Zechariah, and I couldn't believe the insights, the Hebrew insights and rabbinic insights that he had. But this was all, so these were Christian missionaries who won these people to the Lord. That's remarkable.
Actually, what happened was there was a group sent to the Holy Land, and there were a number of people, and they were taking kind of a tour. One of the people from the group fell off his camel and got injured. And on their way back, they had to go back and go through certain parts of Europe. That, because of that trip, because the guy fell off his camel, that ended up in a missionary outgrowth to a place where Edersheim was.
Really? All right, listen, friends, I want to encourage you to keep listening on the other side of the break. If you say, but I lose you on my station, don't worry. Just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the banner, because we're going to talk about David's doctoral work, which is on Jewish views of the resurrection of Jesus. Whoa. So we're going to be talking about that. If you miss any of it, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest audio. But we'll be coming your way live from Israel the next couple of nights. We'll be coming your way from Galilee. And then next week, God willing, coming your way from Jerusalem. So we'll be taking calls, questions every day, and love to interact with you. But we've got the benefit of some special guests joining us. Friends, I really want to encourage you to get a copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. It is the first ever complete fresh translation of the Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek scriptures into contemporary English, but with messianic sensitivities, the letter of Jacob instead of James, letter of Judah instead of Jude, Messiah instead of Christ, Torah instead of law, where it's appropriate. And here's how you can get it. When you become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter, putting aside a dollar a day or more. Some of you can do much more. Some a dollar a day is a real stretch of faith. But you're partnering with us to take the good news of Jesus, Yeshua, the Messiah, to the Jewish people and to the ends of the earth, and to help spark moral and cultural revolution in America. And you know, by God's grace, we're on the front lines of all of those different areas. As you partner with us and become a torchbearer, not only will we send you a new message every month and give you free access to online classes and other benefits, but we'll send you free as my thank you gift this week, a copy, a complete copy of the Tree of Life version. We'll have them in about 2 weeks, a beautiful hardcover edition of the whole Bible. So call now to become a torchbearer, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, I echo the prayer of Psalm 14. Oh, that salvation would come from Zion. May it come to the Jewish people here, and from here go to the ends of the earth. Well, this is Michael Brown, and I am coming your way live from Israel College of the Bible in Israel today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am in Israel, coming your way live. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I was feeling a little jet-lagged earlier today, but getting revived and strengthened as the day's gone on, full of energy. And to my surprise, I just found out a couple days ago that we were going to be able to broadcast from the Israel College of the Bible, a school training Jews and Arabs together for ministry, doing a really unique job. We've had some of the faculty on, a radio host on with us, so just had a great time the first hour. If you missed any of it, go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on Latest Audio later today. You'll be able to catch all of it. And a little bit later in the program, I'm going to be giving away one or two copies free of the Messianic version of the Bible that has just been completed, of the entire Bible, the Tree of Life version. So don't call for that yet, but if you have any question you'd like to ask, the number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We've got a great tour group here and looking forward to just a great time. We hit the ground running tomorrow. I'm about to speak with David Mishkin, who is a faculty member here at Israel College of the Bible. And by the way, to find out more about the school, more about their online program that's being developed, watch many of the videos, edifying teachings, go to One for Israel, O-N-E-F-O-R, onefor-israel.org. But before I speak with David and talk about some of his doctoral dissertation work on Jewish views, not just on resurrection, and not just Jewish views on Yeshua, but Jewish views on the resurrection of Yeshua, the resurrection of Jesus, the Messiah. And I'm eager to hear what he has to say. But before we do that, here are some interesting trivia facts for you about Israel. Are you ready? Israel is the 100th smallest country in the world. That's small, with less than 1/1,000th of the world's population. Did you get that? Less than 1/1,000th of the world's population. Yet, and has the highest ratio of university degrees to the population in the world. 24% of Israel's workforce holds university degrees, ranking third in the industrialized world after the United States and Holland, and 12% hold advanced degrees. Israel produces more scientific papers per capita than any other nation by a large margin, 109 per every 10,000 people. That's wild. 109 scientific papers for every 10,000 people, as well as the highest per capita rates of patents filed. Israel has the third highest rate of entrepreneurship and the highest rate among women and among people over 55 in the world. Relative to its population, Israel is the largest immigrant-absorbing nation on earth. Immigrants come in search of democracy, religious freedom, and economic opportunity. Voicemail technology was developed in Israel. Israel's $100 billion economy is larger than all of its immediate neighbors combined. On a per capita basis, Israel has the largest number of biotech startups. Israel is ranked number two in the world for venture capital funds, right behind the United States. When Golda Meir was elected prime minister of Israel in 1969, she became the world's second elected female leader in modern times. Israel has the highest average living standards in the Middle East. The per capita income in 2000 was over $17,500, exceeding even that of the UK. Israel has the world's second highest per capita of new books. And there's a fascinating fact about the offices and facilities where I am right now. It has the largest something in Israel. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. Where I'm broadcasting from, Israel College of the Bible has the largest something in Israel. What do you, I was going to have you call in with a guest, but that could be too random. But it has the largest something in all of Israel. We come back, David Mishkin, faculty member here at Israel College of the Bible, tell us what it is, and then he's going to talk to us about Jewish views on the resurrection of Jesus.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
But he's a prophesied world's Messiah. They call upon his name from Africa to China, even India.
Prophesied Messiah, Jesus, Yeshua. 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown coming your way live from Israel. Netanya Israel, the Israel College of the Bible. Those are the words sung by Aviad Cohn, Jewish believer in Jesus Yeshua. Okay, right before the break, I mentioned that the Israel College of the Bible has the largest collection or the largest something in Israel. And David Mishkin, one of the faculty members, is going to set us straight. So I'm going to give him five choices that the Israel College of the Bible has the largest ball of yarn in Israel, A. B, it has the largest falafel machine in Israel, C, it has the largest collection of Christian books in Israel, D, it has the largest student in Israel as a student here, or 5, has the most unique collection of Middle Eastern shoes from antiquity. And what is the correct answer, David?
Can I get a lifeline? Can I call somebody?
Or
you want
to
answer
help?
Right now?
Yeah, let's do it. It's not a big prize, so go for it.
Okay, I'm going to say the largest collection of Christian books.
Really? So even though you have prestigious libraries here, the Hebrew University, these amazing schools and universities, Israel College of the Bible has the largest collection of Christian books.
The largest collection uniquely of Christian messianic books.
Yeah. Wow, excellent. All right, David, you... working on your doctoral dissertation on Jewish views of the resurrection of Yeshua. Now, your average person would think that that's about 3 minutes of study. Well, there is nothing to say, and that's all there is to say. But I guess there is something to say. So explain how this is even a subject to write a dissertation on.
Well, it combines two issues that are of interest to me. One is what's called the Jewish reclamation of Jesus. What have Jewish scholars over the last century been saying about Jesus? And the other is apologetics. What are the arguments for historically whether or not Yeshua rose from the dead? And you're right, on one hand, they're not saying a lot. And that's one thing that kind of piqued my interest. Why, if it's such an important topic in the New Testament, Paul says if he didn't rise from the dead we're still in our sins. Our faith is worthless. It's so important to the New Testament. And yet many of the Jewish scholars who write about Jesus write either very little or ignore it. I'll give you a good example. Your friend Shmuley Bateach. Do you know what he says about the resurrection in the
kosher Jesus?
Kosher Jesus.
And I answered that, yes, with the real kosher Jesus.
Surprisingly, he speaks about the life and teachings of Jesus. He speaks about the message of Paul, but he doesn't once even touch on the issue of the resurrection. The only time the word resurrection appears in Shmuley's book is regarding Lazarus.
All right, so is it simply that Jewish scholars say, well, that's just a myth created by the first followers, and that's why we don't talk about it? But wouldn't you still have to explain how the phenomenon came about and came about to be so central?
Well, there are a number of reasons that I look into. Why is it that it's not more of an issue? What are some of the presuppositions that would make scholars say, well, it probably didn't happen? Or in case of Jewish scholars, well, even if it did, it's not relevant to us. And some of these are equally true among Jewish scholars as well as Gentile critical scholars as well.
All right. So once you started to dig into this, you mentioned the Jewish reclamation of Jesus. This is scholars... it happened a lot before the Holocaust, let up a little bit, then it's happened a lot in recent decades. Jewish scholars who are not believing in Jesus as the Messiah, maybe some have, but the great bulk of them, they want to reclaim him for our people, even as a prophet or a national teacher or an inspirational figure or something. I was struck by how many books I had in my library about that as I was writing The Real Kosher Jesus. I have a whole chapter, and almost everything I said in that chapter was from my own library. How would you describe the Jewish reclamation of Jesus, especially in the last 30 or 40 years?
Well, basically recognizing that, first of all, he existed. Not every critical scholar believes that, but that he existed and he was Jewish. And to an extent, well, he's one of us. But some of the claims, mainly the supernatural claims, are the ones, well, some would say Paul, you know, was the one who started those issues, or they're not really true. But definitely reclaiming the fact that he clearly was a Jew. And even if they don't go any further, that's at least the starting point.
In Israel, and we talked to Moti, we'll talk with him again before the show's over, but Sabra, a native-born Israeli, grew up here. He never knew that Jesus' followers said that he was the Messiah, had no clue about that, that there was any connection, or that he himself said he was the Messiah. Your average Israeli studying in school, you get them here at Israel College of the Bible, they're believers. Is Jesus one of us here in Israel? What's the perception?
There's kind of an understanding, well, clearly he was Jewish. You know, if you say, hey, he was Norwegian or Chinese or Mexican, they're all going to say, well, that's not true. Everyone knows he's Jewish. And yet he's amazingly foreign. I was speaking to a couple, both born and raised here in Israel a few months ago, about what I'm writing on. And when I mentioned the resurrection, well, what really did happen? And the wife said, wait a minute, Jesus rose from the dead? She had never even heard that that was a claim.
Wow.
And the husband said, yeah, that's what they believe. And I had a chance to explain why I believed it.
That really says something. Hey, I've just been speaking with folks from the school the last, hour and 15 minutes. We've given away some free Bibles, but I want to grab a phone call before we go any further. I've answered a couple of Facebook questions as well. But let's go to Ada in Queens, New York. Welcome to the Line of Fire, live from Israel. What's your question, Ada?
Shalom, shalom. I wanted to ask you, I have some friends here from Russia, Ukraine, and they always are asking me, what's going to happen with our Jewish people there? They're going through so many things, and I don't have a lot of answers for them.
Yeah, well, you know, when there was the great exodus from the former Soviet Union to Israel, that happened because of times of pressure and difficulty. You have to realize, especially in the Ukraine, many of the Jews there are older, very old. So the idea of relocation is very difficult on every level, physically, psychologically, on every level, practically. So the fact is, though, that Jewish population there is very nervous about what's coming, even though it was not an official government attack with handing out flyers in the synagogues and saying you have to register your possessions, you have to register your name and so on, otherwise there'll be consequences. That did shake up many of the Jews there. It's very easy to get scapegoated. The population now is maybe one-tenth of what it used to be years ago. There has been a history of bloodshed there, especially in the time of the Holocaust. Some horrific events took place. And there are Jewish scapegoating to say, well, they sided with the old party, and so they're the bad guys. And David, we've seen this through history, that when there is some type of popular uprising and you have to blame somebody, Jews get scapegoated. Are you hearing about more Ukrainian Jews trying to come to Israel right now?
There are a number of people who have family and friends, relatives who are still there. So it's been an issue of prayer and concern. I don't know exactly how easy it is for them to come over, but surely they want to be here, and people are trying to help out with that.
Right. And they need prayer. Look, people around the world need prayer, all types of different difficult situations, but it's definitely a challenging one. I expect that many are going to leave as they have opportunity. And of course, Israel is going to be the first place that many of them do head. But thank you for the call. David, in your school, do you have any Jews that are from Eastern Europe originally that are now planted here?
Russian is one of the languages you will hear in the hall, along with Hebrew, Arabic, and English. We have a number of Russian speakers. In fact, this year we even have some classes being taught in Russian, but most of the Russian speakers are also now Israelis who are becoming Hebrew speakers, or who are Hebrew speakers, but A lot of Russian speakers around here.
And many of the Russian Jews that came to Israel, many were believers already when they came, weren't they?
I think in both cases, probably compared with other immigrants to Israel, it was probably the largest group of believers that would come, yeah.
So that was another way of God bringing Jewish believers into the land,
yes,
to serve the land. All right, we come back. I want to talk more about this issue of Jewish views of the resurrection. And get ready, buy your phones. Don't call now. But be ready, 866-34-TRUTH. We come back. First thing, I'm going to give away a copy of the Tree of Life version of the Messianic Bible. Oh, don't want to forget, I just noticed that if you want to order a copy of Can You Be Gay and Christian on Amazon, the Kindle version, the e-version, is the lowest price it's been so far. So it's a great time to order. I'm frankly pleasantly surprised by the tremendous interest in the book, and it's bestseller in a number of gay and lesbian categories on Amazon, fiction, gender, nonfiction, gender, sexuality, things like that. It's being read by a wide range of people, and by God's grace, really making an impact. So go ahead. If you want to order, get the Kindle version at a great discount. Go to Amazon.com. Tell your friends to do so as well.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way live from the Tanya Israel, the Israel College of the Bible, using their radio facilities. I didn't know they had radio facilities until just a couple days ago. So thrilled to be doing that. Also speaking with David Mishkin, one of the faculty members here at Israel College of the Bible, about Jewish views of the resurrection of Jesus. All right, before I go any further, I want to give away a free copy, as in absolutely free, free copy of the Tree of Life version of the Messianic Bible. It is a hardcover volume. I played a part in the translation as well. A team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars and leaders. And it is the first translation of its kind of the entire Bible from the Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. A $30 value hardcover, postage. I don't know why I'm selling it to you. I'm giving it away free. But caller number 9, 866-348-7884, caller number 9, you win a free copy of this Bible. David, those Jewish scholars that recognized that there was widespread testimony to the resurrection of Jesus, how do they explain it in terms of the studies you've done?
Well, what's interesting, not only have a lot of the scholars really dealt with it very slightly or not at all, there's also the other extreme. What's interesting is that the only two full books written by Jewish scholars are amazingly positive about the event. For example, you probably know Pincus Lapid.
Yes.
In the late 1970s, an Orthodox Jewish scholar who ended up saying, yes, I believe that Jesus rose from the dead. However, he didn't believe that Jesus is the Messiah, or at least, as you said, not the Messiah for the Jewish people. So that was one complete book.
Yeah, and we do have a winner, so thank you for the calls, but we do have a winner. Right, so Pincus Lapid, I mean, it's remarkable that he literally believed that Jesus rose from the dead, and he believed that God raised him from the dead, and that was so that he would be the Messiah for the nations, the Savior for the world.
He doesn't get into it too much. He was more interested. This is at the end of the book. He basically said, well, he's not for us. Most of his study was to look at the evidence, and he concluded it makes the most sense historically. There's no other way to explain it.
Got it. All right, so that was the one extreme. And the other extreme?
There was one other who wrote a whole book and was also positive, maybe not quite as positive, a scholar from Oxford, Geza Vermesh.
Yes.
He wrote a book maybe just 5 years ago, one book on the whole topic. He was also very positive. He agreed with all of the circumstantial pieces of evidence surrounding the resurrection.
And he was not. And by the way, again, friends, we do have a winner. Thank you. I'm going to be giving away one more copy in the next half hour, so hang in there. But Geza Vermesh, he was not a supernaturalist. I mean, he had explained away the virgin birth and things like this, but a leading Jewish scholar of Dead Sea Scrolls, but he thought the evidence pointed to a resurrection?
He never quite said that. He acknowledged all of the circumstantial evidence, and he did look at some of the counterarguments, and he said they don't hold up. So he never quite tells us in the book what he thinks. However, he does recognize that besides the other pieces of evidence, the disciples were changed almost miraculously. He doesn't quite use that word, and went out, and something amazing happened.
Right. So this whole idea that there was group hallucination or everybody talked themselves into it, do you have any other examples like that in history where a leader was killed and the followers all hallucinated his resurrection or fabricated it and then died for the faith? Is this a unique situation with Yeshua?
I think it is. There's also a combination of things. It's not only the original belief of the first disciples, it's that in combination with the arguments, for example, for an empty tomb. And then you have the evidence of Paul. You know, you could put the disciples all together. They were a bunch of fishermen from the Galilee, and they knew him before, and he was their teacher. But what about Paul? He persecuted the followers. He was from the other side, and something happened to him as well. So I think it's the combination of these pieces which can make a good argument.
And have you tied in scriptural prophecy with that in your dissertation or just in your other teaching? If someone said, well, show me the resurrection in the Tanakh, in the Hebrew Scriptures. We don't believe in a dying and rising Messiah. Show me that in the Hebrew Scriptures. Where would you go?
Well, that's one of the presuppositions I have. People, well, you know, who cares about the claim of being, you know, risen from the dead? The Messiah is not supposed to die in the first place.
Right.
And obviously Isaiah 53 would be a good choice. And it talks about that. As far as resurrection in general, I would go to Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. But in the Jewish world, even those seemingly obvious issues are heavily debated as well. Even the very notion of a general resurrection is debated.
Right, right. So within the traditional Jewish world, though, there certainly is the view that there will be resurrection for the human race and resurrection for the righteous, etc. The idea of a dying Messiah, there's a Messiah son of Joseph that traditional Jews say will die, and that the Messiah son of David will raise him from the dead. Most scholars believe that these views were developed after the time of the New Testament. Was this a Jewish competition with Jesus, the idea of a dying and rising Messiah, even though it wasn't necessarily for atonement?
Yeah, well, we, as you said, the idea of a dying Messiah does find its way into Talmud and other places written down, obviously, after the New Testament. And there's the Messiah, Ben Joseph, the Messiah son of Joseph, who was supposed to die, and the Messiah son of David, who was the victorious conquering hero. And a lot of us, when we grow up in Hebrew school, they only seem to talk about one Messiah, the one that doesn't sound too much like Jesus. But yeah, I think that was part of it. I think the rabbis looked into the Old Testament and they saw two pictures of the Messiah.
And your doctoral research, where is it being done?
A school in South Africa, the University of Pretoria.
Got it. They've got some top people there, so they give you a good challenge on the thesis that you're writing. All right, friends, if you want to find out more about a program where you can come to Israel for a year, you can study at the bachelor's level or at the master's level at Israel College of the Bible, and the classes are taught in English. One of the faculty teaching in English is David Michigan. Go to oneforisrael.org. That's all spelled out, O-N-E-F-O-R, oneforisrael.org. They've also got a lot of great teaching material that is free there, that's very worthwhile, and you'll be blessed and edified by it. All right, if you appreciate the work that we're doing, and we hear it day and night, we constantly get thank yous. We get thank yous for the work we're doing on cultural, moral issues. I've run into many a Jewish believer who's told me that God used the books that I wrote to bring them to faith or help them stay strong in the Lord. It's a tremendous privilege, but it's always team. It's never one person doing it. It's something we do as a team. So I want to invite you to partner with us this week for everyone that becomes a new torchbearer, one of our monthly supporters, a card-carrying Jesus revolutionary. Putting aside a dollar or more per day, some of you are able to do more than that. It's not hard. Some it's a real stretch to do a dollar a day, but we're trusting God together. Every day we speak to you on the radio, it's a faith stretch for us to do what we're doing. Become a torchbearer, $30 or more per month. And my thank you gift when you sign up will be your own copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first ever Messianic translation of its kind, a $30 value. We'll be sending you that as a thank you gift when you become a torchbearer, and then sowing into you in many other ways every month so that as you're blessing us, we can stand with you. Call now to join our team, 1-800-278-9978. You remember you did it while I was ministering live from Israel, 1-800-278-9978, or our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. One more time, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, that's one of our standard Thoroughly Jewish Thursday intro lead-ins, but we're doing it today because I'm live from Israel. I've been told it's Wednesday. I was actually a little jet-lagged. A lot of times I arrive overseas and just hit the ground running, got a good light sleep last night. I was a little jet-lagged. As the day goes on, the energy increases, and tomorrow early morning we hit the tour bus with our great group of 55, including a couple here for the 30th anniversary. We've got, let's see, age ranges. The youngest is 19, the oldest a couple 76 and 77 years old. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. I've been speaking with different faculty and staff at the Israel College of the Bible here in Netanya, beautiful coastal city. And I spoke in the first hour with Moti, who is an Israeli believer, native-born Sabra. He came to faith in the States. He was one of the fellows you may have seen at the mall selling Ahava products, skin products, and other things like that, and heard the gospel through Jews for Jesus. But then it was a Gentile believer who shared the faith with him, and God saved him. His parents initially cut him off entirely, but then God has reestablished the relationship. Not uncommon. Sometimes the relationships don't get reestablished for many years, but God does work in these families. So I'm going to be rejoined by Moti in a moment. And a little bit later this half hour, I'm going to give away a copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. But first, let me go to the phones, and we'll go to Queens, New York. Stephen, I believe you wanted to weigh in. We've been talking about the resurrection of Jesus. David Mishkin, who was my last guest, part of the faculty at Israel College of the Bible, is finishing his doctoral dissertation on Jewish views of the resurrection. So eager to hear your comments, Steve.
Okay, thanks. Great show and guest. On the Jewish historians, when you mention Pinchas Lapid, you might also throw in a little mention of Messiah text. When you mention Days of Hermas, I think that's a little bit of a stretch because he did have a lot of hostility. It's a little hard to read in anything very favorable from Hermas about the resurrection. You know, maybe there's something there that I've missed. But
let me just say this. Yeah, and it was Raphael Patai who did the Messiah texts.
Not
Pinchas Lapid, but Raphael Patai's got an amazing collection there in the Messiah text. Geza Vermish was interested enough in Jesus to write 4 or 5 volumes. He certainly wasn't a believer. And that's why David didn't say anything definitive in terms of resurrection. But as Stephen, as you've read Jewish intellectual literature, have you found more Jews in recent decades interested in reclaiming Jesus as one of us, one of our own?
Oh, definitely. Let me mention one other historian, David Flusser, who really saw the mirror of first century Judaism through the New Testament, you know, and he was willing to be honest about that, and which most of the anti-missionaries, of course, are very not honest about. And that was one critical issue. Similarly, even Lawrence Schiffman, you know, the professor in New York.
Yes, I studied under him at NYU. I had a class of his on Midrash, the homiletical Jewish interpretation. He's a great Dead Sea Scroll scholar, and he was one of the readers of my doctoral thesis, and I was glad to have his critical eye giving me input.
And I've heard him speak, for example, to a Jewish synagogue, hey, don't get upset about the midnight meeting, at the crucifixion week. You know, the Talmud tells us that these people were a little bit corrupt and everything. In other words, he was being brutally honest to the, you know, well, they wanted maybe to hear an anti-missionary spiel. He was telling them, look, the New Testament you can't knock it historically because it doesn't match up to some anti-missionary, you know, view of the day, because it's a real historical document. But Flusser, I wanted to emphasize, really.
Yeah, and David Flusser, and to be clear, Larry Schifrin is an Orthodox Jew, absolutely did not affirm faith in Jesus, Yeshua, or belief in the writings of the New Testament in that respect. David Flusser obviously became a New Testament scholar and highly respected in that field. Hey, Steve, great interacting with you. We'll be right back with Multi.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That is Yitzhak Perlman playing klezmer, certain genre of Jewish music. As we come your way live from Israel, Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you. If you could pray for me while I'm here in Israel, pray that I'll sleep well. Pray that I'll sleep well at night. Everything else should go great. We're planning to have a live meeting at King of Kings in Jerusalem Sunday night. I think the service is at about 5 o'clock. And then Tuesday evening, a special gathering at a prayer tower led by some of our grads in Israel, 7:30 Tuesday night in Jerusalem. So if you're anywhere near Israel, come and join us. If you happen to be listening to my voice, we're going to have special time together. I'm going to give away another copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible. This is my last one that I'll be giving away today. The complete translation of the Old and New Testament by a team of Messianic Jewish and Christian scholars, the first of its kind. I think you'll find it rich with Messianic sensitivities. It's a $30 value plus postage, but it's my gift to caller number 7. Caller number 7, 866-34-TRUTH. So, Moti, back to you as a Sabra, as a native-born believer. Here in Israel, you are now doing something very special at Israel College of the Bible. You're teaching Jews and Arabs together. How common is it for the Jewish believers to be involved in the reconciliation movement with Arab believers in Israel?
Oh, wow, that's a very tough question. Well, I guess that when it comes to politics, we try to behave.
Yeah, and we do have a winner, so thank you for the calls, but we do have a winner. Right, so you're saying politics can be more divisive, same as in the States, but just more exaggerated here. The
yes.
stakes are higher in a sense.
Exactly, yeah. But the good thing is that when we come to speak about our faith, that we brothers, it doesn't matter where we are and what we do, what our faith is, what bonding us together, what bring us together, especially in a place like in a Bible college that you're supposed to treat your brother as you treat yourself. So when it comes to be with an Arab brother or with an Israeli, both of us Israelis, Arab, Jews, or non-Jews, I guess that the gospel, the message of Yeshua is what keeps us together.
And what would you say are common misunderstandings, wrong perceptions that the Jews have about the Arabs and the Arabs have about the Jews?
I'm not really sure about that.
Hard to say.
Yeah,
it really varies from person to person.
Yeah.
When you have some meetings, one of my friends, a Messianic Jewish leader here in Israel, told me earlier today that he's been involved for many, many years in meetings with Arab believers, some from other countries where they meet in neutral locations. They can't just discuss where they are because it's too dangerous for the people. But then a lot of work here in Israel with Arab believers, Arab pastors he's known for many years. Have you ever been involved in a reconciliation service where people are asking forgiveness from each other, and Israeli Jews to Israeli Arabs and things like that? What happens in a service like that?
I guess that a year ago, I got a chance to be in Nazareth in a church over there that we got from a group from Musalacha that took us to see Arab Christians. And we washed feet to each other, and we reconciled together. That was a very powerful moment just to be there and to see a brother that you never met before, and all over the world thinks and see you as enemies.
Yes.
Comes together and actually wash our feet.
That's got to be a very emotional time.
Very emotional.
Wow. And it's Jesus, Yeshua, who brings Jew and Arab together.
Exactly, yes.
What kind of things, if one was asking forgiveness of the other, what kind of things were happening? Do you remember any of the things where people were asking forgiveness?
Most of it is, I guess, about thoughts.
Yeah.
What we thought about the Jewish people or what we thought about the Arab people.
Give me an example.
Like many Israelis would think that all the Arabs are terrorists.
Uh-huh.
When that's not true. When we actually meet Arab Christian Arabs, we understand that they have their own view, they have their own life, and they respect whoever is around them. I guess that's for the other side. I can't talk for the other side, but for the other side, we, as an enemy, as someone who controlled the land, got power over other people. So we kind of brainwashed from TV, from politics, from everything. But when it comes to understand the other person and to meet the other person and to see their behavior, then I guess everything breaks down.
Yeah, and I know in the Alav movement, the youth movement, well, they'll have hundreds and hundreds of young Israeli believers, teenagers, college age, coming together. They'll specially bring in kids, Palestinian believers, mm-hmm. and they'll honor them, give them special seating. They participate in the worship. What's happening in those circles with young people coming together? Are some of the walls coming down?
I don't know a lot about Alav. I know that it happens every year, but I do know about Netiva Ministry, that they bring Jews and Arabs together, especially youth from all over the country, believers. And you see those two sides actually holding hands together and praise the Lord together and do a lot of things that you'll never see in a common Israeli school in the country.
Mm. And it's, when you hear from the Christian Arabs, are they under pressure from non-Christian relatives or from Islam? There are some ultra-Orthodox Jews that are involved in some persecution of Messianic Jews, but otherwise you have a lot of freedom. But still, there are people that can come against you. They can put pressure on a landlord to not rent. They can spread false information. Every so often, there can be a physical attack or destroying of New Testaments that are handed out and things like that. What happens in the Muslim world if you talk to Christian Arabs who are in the midst of a Muslim population? Is there much hostility towards them?
I bet so. I don't know a lot, but I know a few friends that I have which are Arab Israelis, and they have family in Gaza or in the West Bank, and most of them get a lot of persecution just because their faith mm-hmm. from their Muslim neighbors or family that is Christians but not born again Christians.
Yeah.
That they have any connection with Israelis.
Right. Now, in your own situation, you were not physically attacked by your family in coming to faith or anything like that. If you had lived in a very, very, very Orthodox area and you were born and raised in it and you came to faith in Jesus Yeshua, you'd have to move out of that area. There's no way you could. I mean, no one would do business with you. You would be like a non-person, and perhaps there even could be violence against you. And yet you were not raised in a religious home, correct?
Oh, I did.
You were raised in a religious home.
Yes.
All right. So how religious were you?
Well, my dad became religious when I turned 11.
Uh-huh.
And my entire family are ultra-Orthodox, actually.
Really?
Sephardic ultra-Orthodox.
Okay. So ultra-Orthodox Jew, just so folks understand, that means every morning, what time are they getting up to pray?
Well, my dad wake up around 5:30.
Okay, so they can basically pray before dawn or with the mm-hmm. rising of the sun.
Yes.
How strict are they with dietary laws?
Wow. waking up, tefillin in the morning, kosher meals.
So, I mean, everything's got to be a kosher supervision.
Yes.
Okay. And then when it comes to Sabbath observance, very, very strict?
Yes, very.
Okay. If they were in a hotel on the Sabbath, could they press the button on
an
elevator?
No elevator.
Would they go on the Shabbat elevator that stops at every floor?
Only the stairs.
Oh, so they would only walk the stairs. So it's better to walk the stairs than to push the button or to use the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
That would be considered.
Exactly.
But would they drive?
Nope.
So when they go to synagogue, how do they go?
Walking.
What if it's bad weather?
Bad luck, I guess.
you just do it just the same.
You have to walk.
Right, right. So when you were 11, they turned religious. That's why there was such hostility towards you.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there's a relationship now. Do they think you're crazy?
Most of them, yes. Most of them think that I don't understand where Judaism is really is. A lot of my cousins and aunts just looks at me like someone that got into a very weird cult.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk to me a lot about that, but they know what's going on with my life because my mom and dad, they share that with them.
Right. Right, which is remarkable. And have you interacted with ultra-Orthodox who are, they're searching because they're very, very zealous keeping the laws, and yet they know there's more?
Yes. Well, as you probably know, most of the people who study in yeshiva, they don't study the prophets or the writings.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it is only the Torah, but when they based on the Torah, it's only the oral law.
Right, so it's the traditions about the Torah, the five books of Moses. Hey,
yes.
Great information. Let's really be praying for the Jewish harvest in Israel and pray for Moti's family. And visit oneforisrael.org.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, this is Timothy Brendel, Yeshua HaMashiach. I know Timothy is with great lyric and rap. That's a little bit of a different intro feel. That's because we're coming your way live from Israel. 866-34-TRUTH. I've been talking with faculty and staff from Israel College of the Bible as I'm using their studios. Coming your way live tomorrow and Friday night. So the evening of Shabbat here in Israel. Be coming your way from Galilee. And then next Monday through Wednesday, coming your way from Jerusalem before we head home. So looking forward to these special broadcasts. We'll cover lots of different subjects, not just Israel-related, but because I had the opportunity to sit with faculty and staff. Moti, that I just spoke with, does radio ministry for Israel College of the Bible and their larger work as well. So, all right, a couple things. I know this is way out, but in terms of dates, but June 22nd, Saturday, June 22nd, let me make sure that is Saturday, I am coming to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Let me just see. Saturday the 21st, I'm sorry. I'll be ministering there Saturday night, Sunday morning, but I'm going to do a special listeners' rally. It's not going to be a big preaching event with a big band or anything like that. It's going to be me talking with you face-to-face, giving you some background, some personal history, telling you about more, some of the vision and burden for radio, and then doing some face-to-face Q&A. If you're one of our monthly supporters living in the area, be sure to mark that date on the calendar, June 21st, Saturday afternoon. We'll give you more details. I know it's a little over a month away, but I just wanted to mention it to you. A couple of Facebook questions I just want to cover. Sean, do you believe that there'll be a final scattering of the Jews before the remnant is saved? A view similar to that taught by Ryle, Sefer, Barron, Spurgeon, R. Katz, etc. If not, why? And what do you believe regarding the eschatological salvation of the Jews? No, I do not see another full-fledged scattering and regathering. I don't see that prophesied in Scripture. I see a prophesied final regathering from the ends of the earth, and that has been happening over the last 100 years. I do see a partial exile from Jerusalem, according to Zechariah 14, but that's it. I see great pressure coming on Israel. I see great upheaval worldwide. I do see a future time of tribulation and pain for the entire world and focused on Israel, and I see specific promises that out of that, Israel, Jacob, will be saved. I do expect that under that pressure and on the heels of the fullness of the Gentiles coming in and a powerful witness of the church and the prayers of the church and a powerful witness within the land of Messianic believers full of the Spirit, that that will help usher in Israel's final turning. Now, we don't know the exact numbers. I don't believe it means every single Jew on the planet, but I do believe it means a national turning, what Jeremiah describes as all the families of Israel, what Paul describes as all Israel. That seems very, very clear and very, very plain. Jay asks, have you asked the average Israeli what they think the uniting of PA and Hamas might mean for Israel? Okay, I've still got Moti sitting here next to me. So, Moti, if I can get you back by the mic. PA, Palestinian Authority, and Hamas saying that they're joining together. There's been constant friction, fighting between them. Hamas, there's been violence, killing of different ones, and even torture of different ones. It's anything but a historically friendly relationship. There have been some power plays between them, but now they've said we are united together again. And of course, according to the Hamas charter, Israel cannot exist as a nation, and PA has still refused to recognize a Jewish state in those words. Now that they've joined together, Prime Minister Netanyahu has cut the peace talks. The average Israeli, if there is such a thing, because you guys have a lot of opinions, how do they feel about PA and Hamas coming together?
Well, somehow it's kind of scary to see those two organizations come together and aiming Israel with their weapons and everything. I guess that most of us Israelis doing what most of us are doing is trust the army and trust our leaders to take us to the right place, especially when it comes to understand those the Hamas and the Fatah, which both of them wants to destroy everything that we have here in Israel. but I guess that most of the Israelis wouldn't know a lot about those things or wouldn't care as much as United States or other places around the world will be noticed at that.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, there's an answer from an Israeli. Yeah, Matt, I did say you guys. I'm a New Yorker. I can say you guys, and Moti understands that. But Israelis have a lot of opinions. There's the old joke, if you have two Jews in a room, you have three opinions. But Israel, you have the whole spectrum from ultra-right to ultra-left. You have Israeli professors calling for the boycott of Israel who are anti-Zionists. I mean, you've got the whole – you've got ultra-Orthodox Jews who live here who don't believe in the modern Jewish state. And then you've got everything – In between. So, and real quick, Israeli politics, does it get nasty?
All the time. Oh, if it doesn't get nasty, it's not Israeli politics.
Yeah, friends, whatever we've seen in America, trust me on this, however nasty it gets nastier here in Israel. And those who come to Israel thinking it's just this perfect saintly place, oh, you'll experience amazing things. You'll be in places and walk certain places and say, wow, that, you know, this is where biblical history happened, or this is where future events are going to happen. It everybody's heavily impacted when they come. And many places, as you pray and worship, there's a real sense of the presence of God. For me, it's milchama ruchanit, spiritual warfare, all the time when I'm here. Yeah, real quick, go ahead.
I just want to say we have a president which is in jail, Katzav, and then we have the prime minister, Olmert, is 6 years, got into jail a week ago.
Yeah, so corruption charges exactly. And things and other issues. So pray, don't pray in an idealized way. Oh, the people of Israel. Oh, pray like this is nitty gritty life and death stuff. So many sincere ultra Orthodox Jews, and yet, as I've written, so near and yet so far. So many secular Israelis. The common denominator, they need Yeshua. And really pray, as we'll be doing some ministry here, we'll be having great time with the tour group and broadcasting live. Really pray that God would use this time in a special way. I want to encourage you to partner with us. Just think, as Jewish people come to faith, you'll be part of it. Just think, as we make a stand for righteousness in America, you're part of it. As we raise up and send out missionaries, laborers to the nations, you're part of it. If you can put aside a dollar or more per day, so $30 or more per month, some of you can do much more than that. Some it's a real stretch just to do that. But if you can partner with us, become a torchbearer, card-carrying Jesus revolutionary, as one of my media friends puts it. Not only do we send you a new audio message every month, and you get free access to our online classes and 15% discount in our online bookstore, but we will also send you absolutely free as our thank you gift, a copy of the Tree of Life version of the Messianic, of the Bible, Tree of Life Messianic Version, a $30 value. That's my thank you. So the first month, we're blessing you right back for what you're giving in full. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Be a lot of encouragement coming my way as many of you stand with us this week as we're in Israel. Go to my website, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, Paul lived with a constant burden for the lost sheep of the house of Israel and yet great expectation of the salvation. Let's join together with him.